the little miss.
Yes, okay.
Friends, as announced and as told by the first speaker, the subject of our lecture today is going for refuge. These are familiar words. One has, at some point or another in life, heard the words Buddham Saranam Gacchami, Dhammam Saranam Gacchami, Sangham Saranam Gacchami. We have chosen the title Going for Refuge. And of course, we are celebrating Vaisakh full moon day, which is tomorrow, which is a day of triple importance. Buddha was born on this day, he reached Nirvana on this day, and his end, Parinirvana, was also on this day. This may have some significance, but it deprives us of the opportunity of celebrating the Buddha's teaching three times a year. Instead of three times, we can only sort of celebrate it once. Anyway, so then we are thinking of going for refuge or Sharanagama. Now, to the Buddha for refuge I go, Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Let us just first take the first sentence. What exactly does it mean? We go for refuge. Does it mean that in some of the other religions, like if you worship, if you become a Christian, and if you learn the catechisms, if you go for confession, this, that and the other, all the things which you do, then you are absolved of all sins, because God absolves you. Even in other religions, this idea that by dipping yourself in the Ganges, all your sins will be washed away. People feel that they have committed sins and they want their sins to be washed away, and therefore praying to the gods, taking holy baths, various rituals and so on are performed for the purpose of washing away your sins. And by the grace of God, you are saved. It is important to remember that there is no such thing in Buddhism. Buddha is not a god. Buddha was a man, and after his parinirvana, he has not become a god. He insisted all his life, during all his life, that he was a man. And what he achieved, anybody and everybody could achieve. So it is important to remember that there is no personal God idea in Buddhism. So then, to what are we going for refuge? There is the historical Buddha, and the life and the teaching of the historical Buddha may inspire us. They may inspire us so much that we may want to change the course of our life. We may want to devote ourselves to the Buddha's teachings, to following the spiritual path. So, there is the historical Buddha whose life and teachings may inspire us. And because Buddha, the historical Buddha, has inspired us, we may be going for refuge to the historical Buddha. But it is also important to know that the Buddha principle resides in all of us. This Buddha principle, in a sense, we go for refuge to this inner principle. The historical Buddha has passed away, but the principle which is in us, which is in every one of us, and which we should be able to perceive not only in ourselves but in every living being, is still alive. And therefore, we go to refuge, we go for refuge to this Buddha principle also. And now, going for refuge to the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha is a total response. Total response of your being to the idea which is revealed by the Buddha, to the way which he has shown, and to the Sangha which he established. The highest Sangha which was established is known as Arya Sangha, which consisted of Bodhisattva and some of his very senior and developed disciples. But of course, all who are trying to practice Buddhism, or all who are trying to develop themselves spiritually, are a part of the Sangha. But there is no exclusion. It is not as if people who are not making an effort for spiritual development are not a part of the Sangha. The whole world, in a sense, is Sangha. Because if at all we accept the idea of universal brotherhood, there is no exclusion. There might be ones who are very developed, there might be others who are making an effort to develop, and there might be still others who have not become aware of the high spiritual ideals and who are at least consciously not making any effort to develop. But they are born, they get experiences, and sooner or later it is likely that they will come to realize that there is something beyond this ordinary mundane life. And if and when they come to realize that there is something beyond this ordinary mundane life, they will also begin to devote themselves to spiritual development. That is the hope, and that is the guarantee. All beings have to reach Nirvana. All beings have to develop. All human beings have to develop, sooner or later. So, this is, in a sense, the meaning of the triple refuge. There is first of all the Buddha himself who gave the message. There is the Dhamma which is the message. And there is the spiritual community which he established, and the meaning of the spiritual community which was explained. And now, what about the historical Buddha? We all know about the historical Buddha. Very little is known, but whatever little is known, we can recapitulate it. We have to start actually long before the Buddha was born as Siddhartha. In a very far away life, when Dipankara Buddha was on this earth, there was somebody who, there are two versions of the story, there was somebody who knew that Dipankara Buddha was going to go certain way, walk a certain road. And therefore, this man decided to clean the road on which he was going to walk. The other version is that he was the sweeper and therefore he swept the road. Now, whichever version may be true, what the story says later is that this man who was sweeping the road took one look at Dipankara Buddha and decided that he was going to be like Dipankara Buddha. No matter how many lives he had to spend in the process of achieving this ideal. Now, this is not exactly a historical story. One might even call it apocryphal. But it is a story which has meaning, which is something which we should try and understand. So the historical Buddha was born, as we all know, to King Suddhodana and his wife Maya or Mahamaya. And when she became pregnant and was very near confinement, she was going to her mother's place. This was the Magadha kingdom, of which Buddha was, Suddhodana was the king, and she was from Kosala. So she was going to go to her mother's place. So what happened was that she didn't reach the mother's place, and in the forest she gave birth to Siddhartha, who was named later on Siddhartha. So this is another coincidence, that the Buddha was born in the forest, he reached Nirvana in the forest, and he reached Parinirvana, or he expired or left his physical body also in a forest. So this is how the Buddha, the Siddhartha, was born. Suddhodana was looking forward to the birth of a son who would carry forward his kingship, and he was delighted. And as was the normal custom of those days, he sent for some well-known person who predicts the future. And this man came, and he predicted that either this young boy, who showed even at an early age, there are again many unbelievable facts about the very young child, very young babe, but that apart, we will not go into those stories. He will either be a king of very high valor, and he will rule over a large area and so on, or he will renounce it all and become a spiritual man, a spiritual teacher. Now that was the prophecy. Suddhodana did not want him to become a spiritual teacher. He wanted him to continue in the kingdom after him. And therefore this prophecy had had some consequences. In the meanwhile, of course, on the seventh day, it is said that Siddhartha's mother passed away, and Suddhodana married Maya's sister Gautami, and that is how Siddhartha gets the name Gautam. He was brought up by his aunt, maternal aunt, foster mother. There is only one incident in his childhood which has been related often and which is significant, which is that when he was 6 or 7 years old, not exactly known, when some of these people were outside, not exactly in a garden, but in an open space with trees and so on, this boy was asked to sit beneath a tree while the other people were doing some work in that area with the trees and with the farm or things like that. And apparently this young boy went into a spontaneous kind of meditation and seemed to have had some kind of an experience of dhyana, some kind of an experience of spontaneous experience of dhyana. Now this young boy grew up, he was taught all the skills, archery, swordsmanship, whatever, reading, writing, and so on and so forth. And the king had never forgotten the prophecies, and therefore the king had decided to give the boy everything that he wanted. Everything, absolutely everything was to be made available to him. So there were three palaces. There was a summer palace, there was a winter palace, and there was a palace for the rainy season. And the boy would be expected to be in these palaces according to the season, and all kinds of luxury, all amount of caretaking was available. Suddhodana was quite frightened of this prophecy, and therefore, right from the beginning, he had said that the boy is not to go out of the certain area so that he does not come across any kind of pain or any kind of sights which are of such a nature as to make him question things. However, of course, Siddhartha was married. at the age of 16 to somebody who was not a very near relative but some within the family, Yashodhara, and they continued to live their married life. However, what happened was, what happens is, you see, we know very little about the historical Buddha. So, in a sense, we can allow our imagination to wander a little and paint pictures about what his life must have been like and what must have happened. It is said that he asked his father for permission to go out. So the father gave him permission but made it very obligatory to the citizens of that area where he was to go that no sights, unhappy sights would be there for him to see. There will be no corpses, there will be no people who are unwell and so on and so forth, old people, nothing. So at some point he must have realized that this is what was happening. And therefore, without asking his father's permission, he was a grown up man, married and all, he asked his charioteer Channa to take him out to the outside world. And when he was first taken to the outside world, he saw a sick person. And then he came back. It's supposed to have happened over a period of time. Next time when he went out, he saw an old person. And still, next time, third time when he went out, he saw a corpse. So every time he saw these sights, he was very deeply affected. And he would ask Channa, why is this? Why is this man sick? Does everyone fall sick? Will I fall sick? Will my father fall sick? What has happened? And Channa would say, yes, most people do fall sick. And the same answer was given in the case of old age. Not most people, most people, unless they die prematurely, will become old. And of course, everybody has to die. These were the answers that were given. Now this is something which affected him very, very deeply. And he wanted to find out. He wanted to find a way out of this sorrow. So he went out once again. And when he went out the fourth time, he came across a mendicant. Now what is said is only that he came across a mendicant, but he probably asked him what he was doing, where he was going, and the mendicant might have told him that he was trying to find out something about how the world was working and how to get out of this world, how to become a sannyasin and how to achieve moksha or whatever. The mendicant might have told him something or the other, and all these things remained in his mind. All this luxury that he was immersed in would not satisfy him. The sights that he had seen would not leave him. He wanted to also find a way out. Now, there are one or two relevant things. He saw a sick man. Did he want to find out medicines for curing sickness? Did he want to become a surgeon? No, he was not thinking along those lines. He saw an old man. Did he wanted the elixir of youth and find out the elixir of youth? No. Death, of course nobody could avoid death, so that was out of the question. He wanted to find a way out of this, to find a way out of dukkha. Now the sorrow he came across was a vision. The vision of sorrow. What he had was a vision of sorrow. Now we see all these things, don't we? But we are not affected the same way. Even when we are sick or near ones are sick, even when we have old people in the house, or we ourselves have become old, or not even with the death of the near and dear ones, we do not have that vision. He had the vision of the sorrow of the world. This was the vision of the sorrow of the world that he had, and therefore he decided to leave the house and go in search of truth. Now this is not explicitly said, but thinking over the biographical detail that is available, this student feels that probably from the age of 16 to the age of 29, he leaves the house at the age of 29. How come that he didn't have any other children? We all know that at the age of 29, Rahula was born. Probably from 16 to the age of 29, some daughters had been born. Daughters don't count. They cannot inherit the throne. So he had to wait for the birth of a male child, so that he could leave and his father could look after his son and hope that he will run the kingdom. So he might have waited till this child was born. For all this period he might have been very dissatisfied, very unhappy. But he might also have tried to find out where to go and what to learn, how to live in the forest. It's not easy. You cannot just one day leave everything, go away and start to live in a forest. You are not committing suicide. You are going to go there and live. And you are going to find something which has not been found by anybody. So he must have found out the addresses of these ashrams of Alara Kalama. So he first went to one ashram of Alara Kalama. Then he studied everything that could be studied there. He reached a very high degree of meditation. And Alara Kalama said to him that now you become the chief of this ashrama, I will go. He said, no, I think there is something more to be learned. He went to the Uddhaka Ramaputra's ashram and the same story was repeated. Then he tried to fast. We are all familiar with it. He fasted so much that he became skin and bones, and Sujata offered him the food, and he decided that it was the middle path, which was Madhyama Marga, which was important, necessary for spiritual growth. And then he meditated alone. When he gave up fasting, there were 5 mendicants who were with him, and these 5 mendicants left because they felt that he had given up the right road and he was now eating and becoming a luxurious fellow or whatever. So they left. Then Buddha, on this Vaishak Purnima day, that story also we know, he had decided that this night he will sit till he receives full knowledge. And on the Vaishak Purnima night, there is again a long story about the various sights he had, various temptations. Mara attacks him and so on. He sees Yashodhara looking upset and weeping and so on, asking him to come back and so on and so forth. And he knows that all of this is nothing but the illusions created by Mara. And he sits very firm till he realizes the ultimate truth. Even in philosophy, we call him the 6th rounder. So he is 2 rounds ahead of us, ahead of all of us, everybody. So then, the vision of sorrow. Sorrow is of 3 kinds. There is dukkha dukkha, which is physical pain. But more important than this physical pain is the fact that though there is pleasure, there is not only sorrow, there is pleasure. But all pleasures come to an end. No pleasures last. No pleasures give you final satisfaction. This is known as viparinami dukkha. And third, there is skandha dukkha. Skanda Dukha is that conditioned existence finally cannot give happiness. We stay in this world amidst conditions, and existence in this conditioned world will not give any happiness. Classification is not particularly important. What is important is to compare our response with Buddha's response. If we see somebody who is afflicted, what is our response? Is our response that of saying that is that person's karma, he must have done something wrong and he will have to deal with it? Or is our response, but for the grace of God, there go I. How can I help? What are the ways of helping? So what thought comes in your mind? How you act upon it? You may not be able to go, leave your house and go to the forest and start practicing there. But surely it is possible for you to help people who are around you if they are suffering, whether it is bodily pain or any kind of pain. So what is your thought? That is important. What is your inclination? Do you want to help or what not? So there is the sorrow, there is the cause of sorrow, there is the cessation of sorrow, and there is then the Noble Eightfold Path. Now, sorrow is the cause of sorrow. After the Buddha had reached Nirvana, this is one of his earliest teaching. Absolutely the first teaching was conditioned co-production, but this is also part of his very earliest teachings. There is a little more to his biography, but if there is time, we will go back to it. So, the cessation of sorrow, the cause of sorrow, what does he say is the cause of sorrow? Does he say the cause of sorrow is bacteria? What does he say is the cause of sorrow? He says that the cause of sorrow is attachment. This is a quantum leap. This is not the thought of any ordinary human being. Our minds do not work in that manner. We can only see the immediate cause. We cannot see the ultimate cause. We cannot even see the faraway cause. We can only see the immediate cause, while he was seeing at the root cause, as it were. So there is the cause of sorrow, there is the cessation of sorrow, there is the Noble Eightfold Path. Now this is called the Noble Eightfold Path or Arya Ashtangika Marga. Ashtanga, these are limbs. So they are dependent upon each other. They have to be practiced together. It is not as if you are climbing a staircase. One step, then next step, though of course, while talking we'll say first is this, second is this, third is this. Actually all these eight limbs have to be practiced simultaneously. The first is samyak drishti, total vision or perfect vision or true vision. Now the Buddha had the vision of sorrow, right? That is how he changed his course of life. Most people, quite a large number of people at some point or another, in some manner or another, have this glimpse of reality. It may come through sickness, your own or somebody else's. It may come through the death of somebody near and dear, through grief. It may come to you through some spontaneous mystical experience. This may not happen to everybody. Then there may be a very rare moment of ecstasy. You might go somewhere far away from the world in which you normally are, in nature, and just looking at the sunset or looking at the moon rising or something, you may go into the state of ecstasy, like spontaneous meditation as it were. And that may be itself a vision. Or it may come to you in a dream. It may come in various ways in the case of various people. Now, the important thing What most people will do is they will say, oh, that was a moment of madness. I must not go that way. I must look after my business and I must see that I make profit. So one of the very important things is not to undervalue such an experience. And another thing is not to forget that experience. You should keep the memory of that experience alive in your mind, because that is what will push you towards the spiritual path. That is what will make you work for the benefit of humanity. Now, here we come from the path of vision to the path of transformation. To the path of transformation, that is, it's the same path, but as it were, a different strand. This is samyak sankalpa, perfect resolve. You have to resolve to walk the spiritual path. And now, this resolve has to be not made intellectually, but from the bottom of your heart. So here, emotion is required. Very strong emotion is required. And strong emotion cannot be brought about by just intellectual study. Intellect cannot affect your emotion. You have to develop emotion just as you develop your intellect by working on intellectual subjects. Similarly, you have to work on your emotion and bring it to a high pitch. So, emotional involvement is necessary. One of the things which a story about a one of the things the Buddha had done after his nirvana, he first had the five mendicants which had left him became his followers. We all know that story. And slowly the Sangha was built. And right from the beginning, the Buddha went to the people. He did not expect people to come to him. He walked. He was the walker. And he made all the followers also walkers. So they were not allowed to stay in one place except during the rainy season. 8 months of the year they had to wander and they had to preach the Dharma. They didn't only wander within India. After his demise also they went to other countries. That is how Buddha Dharma had spread and has spread so far and wide. So one of the advanced Buddhist had gone to China, and the Chinese emperor had heard the reputation of this person, and he was awaiting the arrival of this person very eagerly and so on. And when the monk arrived, the Chinese emperor said, Bhante or Bhagavan, whatever it is, give me your teachings. So the teachings that were given were: cease from evil, do good, purify the heart. So the emperor was quite disappointed. He said, everybody knows this. Give me something more solid. So the monk said that there is nothing more important than this. Cease doing evil, do good, purify the heart. This is the teaching of the Buddha. So practice. Put the teaching into practice. Involve yourself from your heart. Purify your heart. This is the message of the Buddha. Sarva papasya akaranam kusalasya upasampada sachita pariyodapanam etam buddhanusasana. This is the teaching of the Buddha. So we all are aware of the dangers of head learning, but it is also emphasized in Buddhism. One of the other stories is that at some point when the Buddha was preaching, at the end of that, when Ananda and Buddha were coming home, maybe the talk that Buddha had given, the teaching that he had given, was about maitri or metta. So, after having heard this talk, Ananda was so impressed, so very impressed, that he said to the Buddha that Bhagavan, Kalyana Mitrata is half the Dhamma. Spiritual friendship is half the Dhamma. So, Buddha says, say not so, Ananda, say not so. It is the whole of Dhamma. So, we can see how much emotion has to be involved in our life. We are all familiar, as a matter of fact, teachings are very often quite similar in many traditions. What are called the Brahma Viharas, we find them even in Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, right? Metta, Karuna, Mudita, Upekha. These four, exactly the same names and exactly the same meaning, also appears in Buddhism. Now, who was before and who was after is not known. There have been several Patanjalis, though there has been only one Buddha. Otherwise, it might have got even more difficult. So, all these have to be practiced continuously. They have to be continuously kept in mind. Friendship, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity. Friendship, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity. I think we all know about this, so I don't want to elaborate on this. But there is one story which again I would like to relate. This is about Zen monastery. There was an abbot of the Zen monastery, and one person who was well endowed, intelligent, had money and so on, had wasted everything, had wasted his life in vice. He had not performed anything which was worthwhile, and he was so disgusted with himself that he felt that there was nothing else to do but to come to the monastery, to this master whose reputation he had come across. So he came to the monastery. Now in Japan, in the Zen monastery, the discipline was that anybody who came for admission had to sit outside the monastery in winter also for 3 days and nights. Before that, interview was not granted. So after 3 nights, he was taken inside, and the abbot said, I mean, he had been informed, of course, that this man had wasted his life and he was not studying or anything of the kind. So the abbot said, Father, is there anything you know well? So this man who wants admission says that, well, I know a bit of chess. So the abbot says, all right, sit down. And he asks some old monk who is an expert at playing chess to come there to play with him. So that old monk comes, chess board is there, and both of them are playing with each other. But before the play starts, this abbot says, whoever loses dies. And he says it with complete and total seriousness, and then these two begin to play. When they begin to play, this young wastrel slowly begins to come near victory. And the old monk begins to perspire. He is frightened. He is not able to win the game. And the wastrel, the man who wants admission, looks up and notices that his bhikkhu is very afraid, and he feels upset, he feels terrible. He feels that this monk has spent his entire life in spiritual quest, and for my sake he has to die. How can I let this happen? And therefore, he starts making false moves so that he will lose. The abbot throws away the chessboard and he says, nobody has won and nobody has lost. And I will admit you because you have shown two things. To my mind, you have shown three things, but at least two things. The abbot says, I had seen you have shown two things. One, concentration, and two, compassion. But actually, this wastrel had also had a vision. He wanted to come to this monastery. So he had many things to his credit, though he was not aware of any. So these Brahmaviharas are extremely important. We need to cultivate them. As much as we need to cultivate intellectual activity, we are very often, we are never taught it. See, you are left to yourself. For intelligence, intellectual work, there are schools. For emotional work, there are no schools. Now actually, their emotional intelligence has also become a very important concept. It is very important. Daniel Goleman has discovered this concept of emotional intelligence. Otherwise, intelligence was only considered just brain work. Anyway. So, this is Samyak Sankalpa, positive emotion. Positive emotion. Total, we cannot say. Even when we say Samyak vision, Buddha's vision, when Buddha saw the four mendicants and so on, it was not total vision. He had total vision after Nirvana, at Nirvana. That was total vision. So, we cannot think in terms of total vision or even total emotion, perfect emotion. But we have to develop it. We have to go forward and develop it. Third is Samyak Vacha. Positive speech, communication, very important. So, various things are to be avoided. Untruthful speech. We all know we should not tell lies. But what is important is that we should not exaggerate and we should not minimize. Neither exaggerate nor minimize. Be absolutely accurate. Our account of everything is so colored by our emotion. We don't develop positive emotions, but our account will be colored by our emotion. We will not give an exact account. That is very important. Then another thing to be avoided is harsh speech. Satyam Briyat Bruyat Priyam Bruyat. So, avoid harsh speech. Then, do not talk too much. Also, do not talk too little. Wherever necessary, it is necessary to talk, you have to talk. But most people will talk too much, therefore that is not emphasized that much. And do not carry tales from one person to another. So, these four things are to be avoided. Now, Samyak Vacha is about communication. Communication can take place in three ways. It can take place through speech. It can take place through signs or expression on your face. The lovers will often not say a word to each other, but from their faces they make out whether the child and mother, the mother sometimes will show her anger, not by saying anything. She will just look angry, not talk and talk. Also by silence. And one of the best examples of communication by silence is Ramana Maharshi, who for 40 years came to the seat, sat there, and just sat for some time, and waves of peace passed over the audience. He said nothing, but he communicated peace through his silence to the people who had gathered. Day after day after day, a large number of people came and just sat in his presence. He was not giving them anything. He was not giving any promises to anybody. Okay. Then there is perfect action. Perfect action is ethical behavior. And in your handout, you have the precepts. There are five precepts for ordinary people, but all of us are engaged in the pursuit of spiritual path, and therefore 10 precepts are there in your handout. These are the negative precepts, what you should abstain from, but there are also positive precepts, what you should do. So, we have perfect action, which is according to ethics, ethical behavior. Then we come to samyak ajivika. Now this is another very important thing. You have to choose your means of livelihood in the proper manner. Why? Because look at your day. How much of your time you spend in work? And you know, once upon a time it was 40 hours a week, but that applies still to manual blue collar workers, but doesn't apply to people who are at a higher level. They are expected to work any number of hours. You just spend that time in working for somebody else, profiting somebody else, you get a defined salary, and you have no time for yourself. So this is something one has to take into account. Also, you have to take into account, what is your firm doing? Is it producing cigarettes? Is it producing wine, alcohol? Is it producing guns? Is it producing bullets? So, some of these things have been explicitly prohibited by the Buddha. Trafficking in people or trafficking in animals. Right, slave traffic or slavery or even animals, buying and selling, taking them to be cut and flesh to be sold, all that has been. Now also it is important to realize that whatever you do affects you, because you are spending such a large time in doing that work, right? So suppose you are in a department, this student had the experience that you are in a department, and in that department most people are corrupt. The one person who is trying to be honest is hounded. And in some cases we have come across these cases, criminal cases, where such a person is even killed. Now this student had the experience of one of her students whom she met and asked what he was doing. So he said he was an income tax officer and looked extremely unhappy. So I said, what was the matter? So he said that people in the department are corrupt and they make my life miserable. It affects you totally. If you are corrupt, it affects you totally, because you become, you have to justify yourself. So you say, this is the way of the world. The world is corrupt, I have to do this. How can I not do this? I have to have the money for this, that and the other, whatever it is. And you become cynical of people who are trying to go the right way. I mean, of course you might go to that extreme of even killing somebody or hounding somebody, but if not that, you become extremely cynical of anybody who is not walking the same path. It also affects you in having limited sight, as it were. So suppose you are a lawyer, you think in terms of law. If you are an accountant, you will think in terms of money, finance. If you are a doctor, you will think in terms of health. Now this student had come across a couple of doctors 35, 40 years ago. For some other reason, I had gone to be examined by this doctor, and this doctor looked at me and said, you have high blood pressure. So I said, no, I don't have high blood pressure. My blood pressure is 110, 70. Oh, is that so? You will have high blood pressure. After about 35 years, his prophecy has come true. I now have high blood pressure, but I don't think that was really good. So, your profession, your vocation affects your mind, and your mind is the most important thing. You have to look after your mind, in what direction it is going. So, then we come to the sixth, perfect effort. Perfect effort or exercise is of four kinds. Prevent this, the exercise is for the mind, not for the body. Prevent unwholesome feelings from appearing. If they appear, second, eradicate them. Third, develop positive feelings. And fourth, maintain these positive feelings. Now we have talked about feelings even before, so one need not go into details, time is also getting over. Five kinds of why things come in the way of developing positive feelings, and these are greed, hatred, then there is restlessness and anxiety, then there is sloth and torpor or laziness, and finally there is doubt. So when these things arise in your mind, how do you deal with them? You have to think of what the consequences are, or you have to cultivate the opposite, or you have to just become aware that these feelings, akushala feelings, unwholesome feelings have arisen in your mind, and just allow them to pass away. So then we come to samyak smriti and samyak samadhi, but we don't have time to go into all the angas, and quite a lot has been said. Samyak smriti, there is a whole thing called the Satipatthana Sutta, and finally there is samadhi, which is meditation. It is said that the Buddha had 40 meditations. He had developed 40 meditations, and he gave meditations to his disciples according to their temperaments. To each person's temperament, whatever was suitable, that meditation was given. Though two basic meditations exist in all Buddhist countries. There is the basic meditation on breathing. This basic meditation on breathing existed even before Buddha's time. It was called Ajapajapa. Ajapajapa has been mentioned in Kabira's song, which is concentration on breathing. And the second is Maitri Bhavana. Now, all this is common to Hinayana, Mahayana, all over the world. These four noble truths and the noble eightfold path are common. An additional thing which the Mahayana added, though it is implicit, because we have seen in today's talk that compassion is very important, but it was developed much better, in a much fuller way by Mahayana, in the concept of the Bodhisattva. And this concept of the Bodhisattva we find also in the voice of the silence towards the end. We will take up the questions not like this, but personally after the meeting. We will just end by a quotation. No one can live a life apart, untouched by other lives. One might as well attempt to paint a picture in one tone with no detail of shade or light, or play a melody with just a lonely note. My life is not just my own design, but part of all the rest that pass my way, and each of these is part of mine.
Principle what you mentioned in the beginning.